and price controlled. Nobody that ever operated them thinks that we can make them work in this complex society without being very unjust. And even the economists that made them work, that were in there, Galbraith and Ackley and the rest of them that administered them, just are violently against them. That's number one. Yeah. The second thing we could do is we could cut down our expenditures by both the private interest and the government interest. Yeah. We have appealed to everybody to do that. Yeah. I held back $1.25 billion this quarter in contracts. I haven't announced that at all. Don't want to announce it, but I did. But the private industry, although a good many of them, AT&T cut out $200 million, General Motors cut out $200 million of their projected building. Nevertheless, the Commerce SEC survey shows that it's going to be about what it was even before I talked to them, 60.5. Now, you have that on the private end. On the public end, the Congress comes along and adds a $300 million GI bill, adds $500 million on the agriculture bill, adds $500 million on health and education. Well, I add $500 million on civilian and military pay. So you add up there, you get $3 to $4 billion added there. So whatever else you say in demagogic speech, the fact is they're not going to reduce expenditures. So you just got to say that one's out the window. So the third thing then, it gets you down to taxes. And what can you do about taxes? The great problem that you're really worried about is these wage demands. You talk to Wilbur Mills and John Burns, and neither one of them are for a tax bill, and neither one of them will vote for a tax bill. And you talk to Russell Long and the group in the Senate, and they will not consider a tax bill. Now, if you sent up a tax bill, you'd have to send up a request that you got to have extra money for Vietnam. That would be the justification for it. You wouldn't even get it heard if you didn't. Then you'd start a great debate over Vietnam, and you'd have that for about 3 months with Fulbright and Morse and the rest of them talking about we being deprived of great society programs and education because we're blowing it up in Vietnam. Then when you got a vote on the bill, you could pass it by just main strength and awkwardness. They'd probably slash your request, but you could pass it. But then you'd come along with your tax bill and you never have a hearing on it in the committee. So then nearly everybody would say, well, the president can't even get financing for his war in Vietnam. Now, if we have to have extra needs in Vietnam and we can prove them, and we have to call up the reserve, and we have to extend our operations, well, we've got a little different question. But we're not going to have to do that this year as we see it. And, here's a letter I got that I'm just dictating a reply to this morning. It's dated June 4th from John Lowe. Dear Mr. President, you know John Lowe?
Yeah.
With so many voices raised on both sides of the argument, please permit me to add mine and suggest that an increase of individual corporate taxes this time would be a very tragic mistake. I'm assuming that the war in Vietnam will not require greatly expanded resources, but they'll be about in line with what you have estimated in your budget. I believe the advocates of higher taxes underestimate the efficacy of the restraining measures that you've already put into effect this year. That the low savings rate is a delay in adjusting to higher social security levels. That the bite of scarcer and dearer money is just starting to take hold now. That the step up in corporate tax payments, the graduation of personal withholding, have all become effective only in the last few weeks. Where statistics are already available, as in machine tools, and orders for durable equipment, and housing starts, and automobile sales, and I'm naming only a few, they confirm that we are already in the process of slowing down our forward momentum to sustainable rates. The enactment of additional taxes this time would, in my judgment, accentuate a correction already underway to the extent that the maintenance of any forward momentum would be put in jeopardy. In fact, knowing the mercurial temperament of many of my businessmen friends, I believe before very long that apprehension about the possibility of recession will take the place of current fears they have of overheating. Now, there's a sample of For what you get otherwise. Now, a lot of them say they won't hold up their hand at a meeting, but we had the labor management group in here this week. I believe there's one man in the group that would favor taxes. Very frankly, this is quite confidential, but I went by the other day, I had my 11 cabinet men, and I had a dozen other advisors, economic council and budget directors and science advisors and, you know, the top man, the head of the bigger agencies of the government, FAA, things like that. I asked them to write on slip those who would favor a tax bill or favor tax recommendations and those that wouldn't. And the vote was 20-odd something to 2. Now, that came from every man at the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, Secretary of Treasury, Secretary of Commerce, Secretary of Labor, Secretary of HEW, Secretary of Housing, Agriculture, all around, the Vice President, the Council of Economic Advisors, the Director of the Budget, the ones. Now, that is true unanimously of the leadership. That is true of the chairman of the committees. And it's kind of like my east-west trade. I'm not sure I did any good. I really think we've got to do something on the building these bridges to Eastern Europe.
But I
sent it up, and the chairman just said we will not even meet on it. Now, whether that's wise to do something like that or not, it may be that you ought to wait and send it up till he will give you a hearing. You follow me?
Yeah. So
what we're going to do, I'm not going to burn any bridges, and I'm going to keep my options open if I can. I rather believe that we do have a great many dangers. I'm frightened about them. I think prices are going up, although the food thing's leveling off very good. The situation, we think, is in very good shape, better than any time. We're not, outside of cotton, we don't have any surpluses hanging over our head that are depressing our farm picture. And we got a little unnecessary people stirred up, I think, by Republican congressmen making speeches about how much we were against the farmer. But when Freeman started to put through $1.1 billion bill for India, that removed and cut down all the surpluses we had, the first question immediately arose is whether or not this would adversely affect consumer prices. And if a man that voted for the city, and 70% of them come from cities, if he voted for the India bill, if that would shoot food prices up. And his only position he could honestly take was no. That it wouldn't have any effect. It would remove a surplus, would make the thing healthy, but it would not substantially increase prices. And he was very pleased that it wouldn't do it. Unfortunately, the Times took the lead there, and they haven't been very helpful to the government lately. They took a lead that says that Freeman is very pleased that farm prices are going down. Now, he didn't say that. But he's very pleased that the bottom's dropping out of them. That's the impression.
Yeah.
Now, if he'd have said they're going up, he wouldn't have removed the surplus hanging over the head.
Yeah.
If he said they're going down, he gets them. So poor devil's caught either way. But what happened is he got his bill through, and he got it through unanimously. And he's got the surplus down, and he's got the farmers planting 15% more wheat. So you can't tell me that in time they're not going to be pleased about it. And the milk thing's troubling us now, but we're going to have to increase that 100 or so million probably, because we're just not producing enough milk to take care of a demand. But the farm situation, I'm not worried about it. It's going to be doing pretty good. We contracted my calves this week, 26 and 28. And 2 years ago, I contracted them for 19 and 21.
Well, I think the farmers are in fine shape, generally speaking.
Well, you see these damn committees, John, these Republican National Committee, they got nothing to do but bellyache. They send up these little canned speeches about 1 minute. They get old man Gross to lead off with one of them, and then they get everybody else to run along. And they say Freeman is destroying the American farmer. Now his income's up from 10 to 15 billion since Freeman came here. That's not a bad record. We have the same fear that you do. Everybody in the government does. But if I could get it today, and I were dictator, I could get $10 billion extra on Vietnam and get a tax bill that would offset it, take it off. I wouldn't ask for it, because I'm not that sure of whether we're going to have a little falling off or a great big pickup. I'm frightened about the pickup, but when you go to Ford, went 4 days late yesterday.
Well, the construction workers here got over a 3-year contract of getting a $1.05 increase in 3 years. I've got 40, 30, 35, something like that. That's going to increase cost of building very substantially.
That's right, and we would hope that the damn fools just wouldn't have to build everything that has to be built. We're not.
Yeah.
We're postponing and holding back. And if a businessman, that's one reason Bill Martin went up on his money so high.
Yeah.
He just hopes that he can tighten it up and that everybody won't have to do it. We'll need all this building when these boys come out, because McNamara let 800,000 of them go so damn quick you won't know what happened.
Yeah.
And that's what did in Korea. And we just hope that we can appeal to our folks not to get every... You know, I got a friend in Houston, John. Lady Bird said the other morning, said, why do you wake up so early? I said, I'm just waiting for my friend to call me. He wanted to build a big office building, because every war we've ever had, he immediately needs a building. It's just something about him that he just feels like he's got to build. And he wants a bulldozer if they're not available. If they're available, he's not very interested. But there's something about this thing that's contagious. People like to, they really get ants in their pants. And if we could just get them to curtail a little bit of their desire to fit it in when we need it instead of when we don't need it. Now, everybody thought labor was going to be under 3% a month ago. Now they think it'd do damn good to keep it under 4.
Yeah.
That's it.
Speaking of Houston, I just read in the morning paper that Meekum has not gone through with his Houston Chronicle deal.
That's right.
Going to sell it to Newhouse, or what is going to...
I don't know. I don't know. They've taken it back. Meekum had the money problems. Meekum offered Chase National, he'd move with Chase National, and I'm told that he offered him $200 million security for $30 million loan and agreed to pay 90% of the revenue from the operation in every month on the payments and pay him 7.5% interest. But they were tight, and they just didn't do it. Here's the labor supply. And whether or not the May unemployment rate turns out to be a reliable indicator of recent trends in and outlook for manpower, tell a gratifying story. The large employment increase the past year, reassuring evidence that employers are still hiring needed workers. There are no significant bottlenecks. First 5 months are compared to the same period of last year. Non-agriculture payroll has expanded 3 million, 800,000 in key areas, 1 million in trade and service areas. There's an upsurge in the employment of highly skilled and educated workers, 315,000 professional technical workers, 370 skilled, 620 semi-skilled. These groups with traditionally high unemployment rates have made important gains in employment during the past 12 months. So far this year, as compared to the same period, 65, employment increased by 310,000 for non-whites, 800 for teenagers. The dramatic increase in employment occurred as a result of an increase of 1.5 million in our labor force. The efforts of American businessmen and labor in upgrading experienced workers and redesigning jobs to accommodate the less experienced, and the rapid growth in the past year of your manpower development training programs, especially those that you have sponsored under the aegis of the federal government. The workers are now moving up the ladder. They're quitting old jobs for better ones, and some workers change employers to improve their status. Others are promoted to fill vacancies.